kind of what you've been thinking about. And so I had a dream, man, and I were just like sitting in a room together, and then she left the room and then came back, and she's like, oh, I had the baby, which it's amazing, like, what you believe in a dream, right? I mean, it's like, wait a minute, like, I haven't had a kid before, but I'm pretty sure that's not how it goes. I mean, I'm pretty sure you kind of think, like, why wasn't I thinking a little more critically in that dream and kind of having my wits about you? So I was like, whoa, that's great. Where is it? And I went in and saw that it was a girl, which we don't know if we're having a boy or a girl, so we'll see if my dream is prophetic or not. But man, he said, you know, it all happened so fast, we haven't even had a chance to get the name. And then I said, yeah, we should probably think about that. And she's like, well, why don't we just all come up with it together? And then I look around, and there's a room of like 25 people in there, including someone I hadn't seen in like 20 years. And they're like, yeah, how about we get her input? And like, that is more Mandy's nightmare, I think, than mine, like having input. And it's a pretty bad idea, though. You know, your name that you pick, you want it to be like really special and sacred and something you come up with together. But it's like, yeah, a person I haven't seen in 25 years, what do you think of the name that I'm coming up with? And I came up with a name in my head, and right as I'm about to say it, I woke up. So I didn't get the feedback of the room, which is probably a good thing. And have you ever had a bad dream? We all have. In the book of Amos, we're going to look at Amos chapter 7 today. Amos has these visions about what's going to happen to the people of God because they've fallen off, they've gone in the wrong direction. We've been looking at the book of Amos for the past 8 weeks, and we are going to have two more sermons after this on the book of Amos. Amos is a challenging book, and we've been calling the series The Heart of God because I think it reveals God's heart for us. And remember, we have the picture of the lion there because the book starts out with this roar that comes from God, and we learn that God roars about injustice. When his people come to worship but don't live a life that reflects a care for those who are in need. And as I've said over and over again in this series, if you want to look at what God would look like with skin on, look at the life of Jesus. Look what Jesus did. But if you want to know God's heart, especially for people who consider themselves to be followers of God, look at the prophets. Because the prophets are a great example of God saying, no, 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 you need to do this, bring this back. God speaks to the people of Israel who are supposed to be his people and says, no, no, correct this, move in this direction, because God's heart is that we would be living examples of him in our world. So Amos has these visions. And visions are actually common in the Old Testament. There's a scholar from Union Seminary in Virginia named Elizabeth Achtermeyer, and her book I've been reading, it's been a great book. It's very creatively titled Minor Prophets 1. It's really fantastic. So if you want to read more about the book of Amos or other minor prophets, it's a great book. And she says about the visions that Amos has, it says, visions were frequent means of God's communication with the prophets. For example, Isaiah sees and hears God in the heavenly court. So visions are just a common way that God communicates with the prophets and says, okay, here is this vision that I have. Now go and speak this to the people. And Amos actually has five visions, and we're going to look at three of them and briefly mention another one. But these visions Amos brings and just says, this is what God has revealed to me. This is what God has told me to tell you. So it starts with this. In Amos chapter 7, verses 1 through 3, this is what the sovereign Lord showed me. He was preparing swarms of locusts after the king's share had been harvested and just as the late crops were coming up. When they'd stripped the land clean, I cried out, sovereign Lord, forgive. How can Jacob survive? He is so small. So the Lord relented. This will not happen, the Lord said. And as we've gone through this series of Amos, I know sometimes it's like, man, this guy just makes me uncomfortable. And the people during his day didn't really like him all that much. And people didn't really listen to him. They told him to go away. So he kind of gets a bad rap. I mean, he gets a bad reputation. But Amos and the other prophets, oftentimes it's not that they want to say to somebody, I mean, you never really want to say to somebody like, hey, God's raining judgment down on you. Nobody really wants to do that unless you're kind of upset at them maybe specifically. But Amos doesn't really necessarily want to do this. In fact, he, in this passage right here, he's fighting for the people. He's praying for the people. He says, sovereign Lord, how can they survive? Jacob is a term for the nation of Israel. How can they survive if these crops are gone? especially because this is after the king's share. This is after the really rich and wealthy, when they would get their share of the crops. These crops would be destroyed. So Amos says, God, you can't let this happen. So the Lord relents. And the visions continue in Amos chapter 7, verses 4 through 6. This is what the sovereign Lord showed me. The sovereign Lord was calling for judgment by fire. It dried up the great deep and devoured the land. Then I cried out, Sovereign Lord, I beg you stop. How can Jacob survive? He is so small. So the Lord relented. This will not happen either, the sovereign Lord said. So there will be this judgment by fire. And Amos is again saying that the people aren't ready for this. Please, God, they can't survive. They're so small. And again, you see Amos living like a prophet, because the prophets oftentimes are in conversation with God. And sometimes God adjusts to them. God says, okay, I will listen to you and make an adjustment. You see this happening in the book of Amos. Then there's another quote from Elizabeth Achtmeyer. Moses is the great and first of all the prophets. He begged God to turn aside in Deuteronomy. Jeremiah pleaded so frequently with God for the forgiveness of his people that God finally had to tell him to be quiet. God's like, please stop talking to me. Stop, okay? These people are out of control. I won't listen to you anymore. So that's kind of the form of the prophet sometimes. They go to God and say these prayers and fight for the people on their knees. God is sovereign in our world, but this reveals something interesting about prayer, that God runs the world in response to prayer. I mean, think about that. If people are like, well, I don't really know if praying matters. I don't know if God really hears me, but these things show us that God hears our prayers, and God adjusts things based on what the prophets are praying. And I've heard it said that our ministry is prayer, and the rest of life is just carrying prayer out. And you see this in the prophets over and over again. They are praying to God down on their knees for the people. So it's not that Amos is a bad guy. He just really wants to just go say to these people how horrible they are. It's he has pleaded with God again and again, and God has relented. But at some point, God's patience will run out. And Amos goes and delivers this message. And a third vision that Amos has continues in Amos chapter 7, verses 7 through 9. This is what he showed me. The Lord was standing by a wall that had been built true to plumb, with a plumb line in his hand. And the Lord asked me, what do you see, Amos? A plumb line, I replied. Then the Lord said, look, I am setting a plumb line among my people Israel. I will spare them no longer. The high places of Isaac will be destroyed, and the sanctuaries of Israel will be ruined. With my sword, I will rise up against the house of Jeroboam. So God says to Amos, I'm going to use a plumb line to see how my people Israel are acting. Now, a plumb line, you may not know what it is. I don't really know that well either. But a plumb line is just a weighted measure that you would use to see, kind of a string or some sort of line, to see if a wall was built called true to plumb. Like it's straight and it's what it's supposed to be. And so God says to Amos, okay, I'm going to use this plumb line to see if my people Israel are crooked. I mean, if you have a crooked wall, you don't want to keep building on it, because then it's just going to keep getting more and more crooked and messed up. So he says to Amos, I'm going to put this plumb line among my people. I'm going to see if they're being true to the life that they've lived, true to the calling that I've given them. Are they living correctly? And you'll notice something that's different about this vision. In the other visions, you see Amos responding and saying, God, please, you have to change your mind. Please make an adjustment. But this time, Amos says nothing. Because for one, he's been praying so much, and God continues to relent and continues to show patience. But also, I think Amos is like, this place is so crooked, I think they're caught red-handed, right? And when you put this plumb line among these people, it's not going to come out so well. Have you ever been caught red-handed in a moment? You know, you did something wrong and people are like, oh, you kind of sell yourself out. You're a little too far, in a little too deep. When I was growing up, my family didn't have a whole lot of snacks around the house, and I went over to my friend Christopher Dobek, one of my best friends, and they had in their closet what was called the snack capital of the world. I still think it exists to this day. It's a little bit different form, but it had a lot of candy and fruit snacks and everything, so I loved the snack capital of the world. My brother and I would go over there and take a tour. It was extremely enjoyable. And one time I came up with this idea, this brilliant idea as a kid. You're like, man, this is so smart. I thought, what if like I could take some snacks home? Like I could go there and take a few snacks home. Well, if I do that, I'm going to need to be prepared. So I thought I need to take my cargo shorts with me because cargo shorts have extra pockets. See, they have extra pockets. So you have the pockets on the side and then extra pockets down low so you can get tons more stuff, you know, like double the stuff from the snack capital of the world. And so there's one time I was hanging out with Christopher having a good time and then it was getting toward the time and it was time to go. I find a way to sneak off to the snack capital of the world and I was just loaded. Like these pants were almost falling off me. They were weighted with all of these treats and goodies that I was looking forward to eating one day soon. And I remember on my way out of the house, I took a step and there was like a wrapper in my pocket. I was like, shh, shh, you know, it kind of makes that little noise. And I took a step and someone was like, Brian, what is that? And I said, I don't know what you're talking about. And my brother knew about my love for the snack capital of the world. And he was like, are you sure, Brian? And I took another step and it was like, shh, shh, just like all these things wrapping together. And then I took another step and it continued to make that noise until finally they were like, Brian, show us what's in your pockets. And it was really horrible. I mean, it looked like I had been out at Halloween just with all this candy and stuff spewing out of my pockets. And I'll always remember that. I mean, those kind of stories we remember because you get caught red-handed. You know, you've done something and you have to unload all your pockets to the shame of everyone there. It's like, man, it's worse than I thought. Your cargo pants are full. I think Amos sees a similar thing and feels the same emotion that the people of Israel are caught red-handed. And if you put this plumb line among these people, you're going to see that their lives are way off kilter. They're way too crooked. So Amos says nothing. And after relenting or getting God to relent through prayer again and again, this time he says nothing. There's another vision that Amos eventually has about ripe fruit. And we wouldn't recognize it, but the Hebrew word for ripe fruit sounds a lot like the Hebrew word for end times. And so it's kind of this word play that happens. So in a way, it's God saying, the end times for my people are coming. The end times are near. And as people who generally in here would say that we are followers of God, then the question becomes, but why? And why is it that Amos delivers this message? Why does God condemn these people? I think God reveals that in Amos chapter 8, verses 4 through 7, one of the most important passages in this book. Hear this, you who trample the needy and do away with the poor of the land, saying, when will the new moon be over that we may sell grain, and the Sabbath be ended that we may market wheat, skimping on the measure, boosting the price, and cheating with dishonest scales, buying the poor with silver and the needy for a pair of sandals, selling even the sweepings with the wheat. The Lord has sworn by himself, the pride of Jacob, I will never forget anything they've done. Chris, if you go back to the first slide of that. So it starts with God kind of says, okay, this is what's going on. This is why the end times are coming for you. This is why you're out of plumb. This is why this judgment is coming on you. It's because in these religious festivals, when the new moon is going on, when you're celebrating the Sabbath, all you can think about is when will this be over? And I know you probably have been at some church services where you have thought that before. And that's okay from time to time. You're like, when is this going to be over? I got to go do something. I mean, that's okay to have from time to time. But this is the consistent mindset of these people. They're like, when is the Sabbath going to be over so I can get back to selling wheat? And when is this religious ceremony going to be over? It's kind of like at a long wedding, right? You're like, oh, when is this wedding going to end? I'm really hungry. Let's get to the food. And when is this festival, when is this going to be over? Because my mind and my heart is out there in the marketplace. And it's not in here with God. God, who may have at one time captured my heart and my emotion and my passion, I don't really care as much anymore. You see, for these people, church is their hobby. And their business is their religion. So they're sitting there thinking during worship, well, how can I make a more dishonest scale? How can I turn more of a profit? How can I exploit these people? How can I do this? And they're thinking of this as they're worshiping God. They've lost their first passion. They see no connection. And the task of the church during Amos's day is just to make everybody feel good, to remind them that, yes, they now are very wealthy, so God must be on their side. And there's a warning here for us, that you can spend the rest of your life making religion a hobby and never truly be changed. I mean, how in line are your passions? Where does your mind consistently wander? And like I said, I mean, every once in a while, I kind of just like have a moment where you're thinking about something else or your mind goes somewhere. That's understandable. That's human. But these people, their whole life was just spent thinking about work and not at all about worship. One way to think about this is, what is your view of heaven? I mean, if heaven was just like meals with really good friends and spending time among people that you loved, but God wasn't there, and would that be okay? I mean, is your view of heaven just kind of hanging out and spending time together, but Christ doesn't really need to be a part of it? Where are your passions? Have we lost our first love? The book of Revelation, John is writing to several churches, and he says this powerful word to the church at Ephesus in Revelation 2:4. Yet I hold this against you. You have forsaken your first love. You've forsaken the whole reason why this whole movement got started. You've forsaken God. You've forsaken Jesus Christ, who is at the center of this, the resurrection of Jesus. You've forsaken your first love. You've let other things become your number one passion. You've let other things be the thing that your mind often wanders to. You've moved away from the things of God. You have lost your first love. This is similar to what Amos is saying to the people. Because as they're sitting in worship, all they can think about is how they're going to get out of there one day. You know, maybe a few hours later, but they're going to get out of there and they're going to get back to the work that really matters. And they're just going to try to make as much money as possible. I mean, it's easy for all of us, I think, to fall into this trap, to let other passions become number one, especially for these people. The time before, we've talked about how in the book of Amos, they are extremely wealthy. Trade routes have opened up, and so money just starts flowing in to the kingdom. But the times just before that hadn't been so good. In 2 Kings 13:7, it talks about how there's only just a few horsemen left. The time in the nation of Israel in 2 Kings 13:7, it's very low. It's at a low point. And then this new king comes onto the throne. Things happen, and they start to spread out their borders. So wealth starts to come in, and wealth and prosperity becomes the way that they see the world. I mean, you can think about it like glasses, like the way that they're seeing the world, the lens that they have to see the world is their profit. And they're standing. And again, they think God must be on our side because all this wealth and prosperity is coming in. God must be on our side, right? And so they have these lenses, and that's how they see the world. And so this passion takes over as they're sitting in worship, and they're just wondering, when is this going to stop? When is this going to be over so I can get back out to where my true passion is? And Amos reminds them that to live as people of God, you have to change your lenses. And you see the world in a different way. You see the world as all an opportunity to worship. You have new lenses on to see the world in a new way. A good example of this is just with Family Promise coming up tonight. There are so many different ministries that you can get in part, be part of and be active with. But just this week, we had so many people who brought food up here for Family Promise this week. And as they were out in grocery stores, they're buying things for their families and things, they had another thing on their mind. They're like, okay, well, I also signed up to bring Cheerios or cereal. And it was interesting. I pulled this out. I don't even know who brought this, but I pulled this out. There was only one Cheerios, and then I looked back in there. There was like three more boxes of Cheerios that just came in. So those just kind of keep pouring in. You take one away, and then three more comes in. But you go into a grocery store, and you have certain lenses on, certain ways that you see the world, because your worship of God affects how you shop. Your worship of God gives you a new lens to see the world, and you have been blessed to be able to afford an extra box of cereal. And so you don't worship prosperity for prosperity's sake, but you say, I'm going to use this, and I'm going to use this vehicle, my shopping trip, to worship God. And people all week were worshiping in grocery stores all across these cities because they said, I'm going to see the world through different lenses. My worship affects my life. My worship affects the way that I see the world. I don't know, it probably embarrass Dave and Ashley Crooms, but they're leading our meal tonight. And it's probably not like Ashley's idea of a good time. Like, I was really hoping that I would be able to prepare a casserole today, like the hottest day of the year. You have to crank up the AC in there to get the oven working. I have a picture of a casserole. You don't have to do this casserole specifically, but it looks pretty good, I'd say. And then there's lots of other casseroles that you might be making this afternoon. But it probably wasn't high on Ashley's to-do list. Like, I really hope someone asked me to make a casserole for people. But because of her worship, she will. Because worship affects life. Worship affects the way that we see the world, the lenses that we have on to see our world. I mean, for the people during Amos's day, their prosperity just made them say, ah, church life is good, God's happy. So they started letting their passions go in that direction. And so they started letting that become the way that they saw the world, and they forsook their first love. You can worship in a grocery store. You can worship with how you spend your time. You can worship with how you spend your money. You can worship with how you treat people. It's about a different way of viewing the world. What lenses are you seeing the world through? What is your first passion? I want you to think about that this week, to really be convicted and ask yourself, what is my first passion? What is a first priority to me? And I want you to think about how worship just isn't here, but it's a whole life. Because Amos says, while you're in worship, all you're doing is having your mind wander to all these other places and all these other things. And he says, in fact, the life that should be lived is that while you're doing all these other things, your mind continues to wander back to worship. Your mind continues to wander back to God. We're going to sing a song right now called On Bended Knee. And I hope that you'll remember this and take this as a reminder that as we enter into our world this week, we enter it on bended knee, worshiping God. Because Amos reminds us that all of life can be worship if we let our number one passion be the God who loves us and the God who made our world. Let's stand and worship together.